With traffic, errands, and parking, cars can be a chore.
But a great car can be an adventure, a getaway, and a prized possession.
Whatever your budget or family require, there's a car out there you'll love. We're here to help you find it. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
You may have seen on social media the big sedan challenge is in full force, and things are already happening, and I am already seeing... Let me back up. The Phaeton actually ran great from the moment I got it off the truck.
That's the point of selling the car. Hey, you bought the car, it runs great for about 5 minutes.
Well, but I actually drove it a lot from when I got it off the truck. I mean, you heard the story about the policeman. Welcome back to the podcast,
yeah,
by the way.
No kidding.
You know what? Let me stop real quick. We are in the middle of a road trip today. That's why it sounds like it does. We are in the Expedition. We were supposed to be road tripping in the Phaeton. We're in the Expedition because of the story I'm about to say.
Yes,
and as
yes.
you heard in last podcast, Paul's driving. We're glad to have the Expedition. It's doing awesome, except this drive is boring. But it's a separate thing. We're with you guys. It's exciting.
It's cool to be actually recording a podcast driving, knowing that you might be listening to this podcast while you're driving. It's cool. It's
and
cool to be along for the ride.
Yeah, hopefully the audio quality is halfway decent.
Yeah,
but
we're
hammering along. We thought it was going to be a very quiet studio because we thought we were going to be in the Phaeton, which has double pane everything and
yeah,
no sound.
But no.
But we're not.
We're in the Expedition.
I drove it for the better part of like 4 or 5 days because, again, I got it off the truck. You heard the story last podcast about the funny thing that happened with the DMV and the sheriff and all of that kind of stuff.
Cool.
It's been running great.
Super cool.
I put it in our local mechanic to put winter tires on it and do an oil change. And they also did a check over of it. And all seemed great. Lots of meat on the brakes. Everything's looking good. Put new tires on it, that kind of stuff.
Meat on the brakes.
Yeah, you know. Anyway, and
like
so
meat on the bone.
While we were gone to Los Angeles for the LA Auto Show, which is what most of this discussion will be, it got really cold here and snowed a lot, and I got back, and the suspension was compressed as low as it goes, meaning just kind of, I'm just going to... And let's think.
There's kneeling bus, and then there's Todd's Phaeton.
And then there's this,
it's
yes.
below the bus.
Now, Phaetons are known to, if they sit for a while, they will settle on their suspension, especially in the front.
Right, right. This is
mine,
another thing.
Mine even did on the transport truck. But as soon as we started it, it lifted itself up and settled out, and the suspension's been working. Nothing has been broken in the suspension. Except for now it is.
Now.
So I took it back to the guys that worked on it, and we talked it over. And the first thing I'm doing, here's the craziness that is the Phaeton. It has two, count them, two batteries, both of which are in the trunk. One is designed just to start the car. One is designed to run all the electronics on the car, of which there are tons. The batteries are simultaneously like symbiotic and parasitic, okay? If the one that's supposed to start the car doesn't work, you can trick the car and ask it to ask the other battery for power, and it will do so. I mean, this is crazy the
way
this
thing
works.
There's so many little things about this car. It's astounding. You have to know all the tips and tricks and the insider stuff, and you twist the key to the left, and you dance around the campfire, and you rub your belly, and you pat your head.
It's absurd.
Then it does the thing that you want it to do, whether you're getting into the trunk or the back doors or the fuel filler or anything like that.
Yeah. So it does all these kind of things. And what I have heard consistently about the Phaeton, Paul's right, it's just the amazing number of gremlins that are possible. But so many of them relate to one of the two batteries or both of the batteries not being new enough and good enough. So I am having the guys that are working on the car put new batteries in first. Then I have to figure out, do I need new front struts? Which I might, which is the thing that every 2004 on the planet is plagued with, is needing new front struts at some point, to the point that Volkswagen even did a recall.
That's insane.
But the recall that they did, first off, this car is 15 years old. I don't think my local Volkswagen dealer is going to be excited about the recall.
No,
but
they won't even rub their hands together in glee when you bring it in.
But the way the recall worked is they would put in new suspension, but they would make the owner, they would put in all four new struts. They would make the owner pay for one.
Oh.
But according to the forums, you're on Maserati Life, I'm on VW Vortex, yo.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, so I'm in the Vortex. It feels like a Vortex right now, I gotta tell you. It's going nowhere good. No, but Volkswagen would pay for three of your four struts, but most people, when they took it into the dealer, the cost for the single strut they paid for was between $3,000 and $4,000. So based on the research I've already done, I should be able to get the front struts, assuming I need them, which I'm kind of planning for it and hoping I don't. Can I do both? Can I hope for the best and plan for the worst? That's
sure.
where I'm at.
Well, that's what we're both doing with these cars.
That's what we're doing.
That's what the entire internet is doing, all you guys listening. So thank you for following.
I may
this
need struts.
Getting crazy.
So we'll see. So this is the first thing. And you also have to know, we were going to take this car on this road trip today and shoot the first piece of the car, about the car, while on this road trip. Now I can't because it's laying on its front suspension. So that's what's up with the Phaeton. We'll see. I will, of course, keep you guys informed. This will be also in video form when I do the first review, but I got to get it up off the floor first. Honestly, some of you made stance jokes. This feels worse than any stance car you've ever been in. It's just riding as low as it possibly can, bumping into everything. It's on the bump stops, essentially.
Oh, my god!
It feels awful. So it's getting fixed, we hope. And well, there'll be many new Phaeton fails and stories.
The both videos are going to be coming, guys, on the first drives for both these cars. So that's coming to YouTube soon. In the meantime, the Maserati has gotten its first check engine light. The CEL has lit up the dash.
This is why we have these cars. Oh, no.
Here's the problem. I mean, of course, I haven't actually checked it yet. Todd's got an OBD reader, so we're going to plug it in and find it out. So anytime you clear a CEL, that doesn't fix the problem.
No,
that just clears the code, okay?
Yeah, the code's cleared. Yeah.
So I don't know what it is. It could have been the oil draining on one of the electrical connectors underneath the car. It could be anything. But the car is running more smoothly since I've been driving it more.
Yeah.
And I was thinking myself as I was driving around, I took it to the DMV to get the plates, to get it registered.
Love it.
And I'm driving it around town, and it's snowing and cold. I'm thinking, perfect winter car. It's the perfect winter car. Everybody's looking at me strange. You're like, what are you doing in that thing, man?
Yeah, yeah.
It's on its terrible summer tires at this point, so we're getting winter tires. Those are ordered. And I was just breaking loose, you know. Coming from
Were
a complete
you?
Standstill, the car would start to slide sideways.
Seriously?
It doesn't just break loose and you're like, oh, I lost traction. The car slides sideways.
That's amazing. I hadn't heard that. That's amazing.
Just for the crown of the road, the slight crown of the road, it slides into the car next to you.
Funny.
Yeah, it's no
terrible.
Good. It's no
That's
good.
Very funny.
So I got this check engine light. Don't know what it is yet. And the scary thing is, it says, ECU, fault, go to dealer. Like, what?
That can't be good.
Go
news.
To dealer?
But
no.
But I like your contrast, though, Yikes. With the fact that it's running better than it did the day we drove it away from Vegas.
It did. It used to have this weird, crazy rumble, you know, at 3,000 RPM, right around there. And that's smoothed out. That's gone. So I'm really excited about that. I think the fact that both you and I are just driving these cars
yes.
already, getting some miles on them, is good. Not today, and I wasn't about to take the Maserati in this road trip, which we need to tell you briefly, and that is we've been invited by a podcast listener, Robert G. He is the Dean of Energy at University of Wyoming MBA program. I think I got that right, Robert. And he has invited both Todd and I to come to Laramie, Wyoming to speak to the MBA grad class for their business school and also the incoming business school freshmen. So we're driving to Laramie to pretty much explain our story.
Yeah.
They are actually having the students listen to podcast number 52 in advance of our trip there. So our entire business of everyday driver is going to get broken down by MBAs.
Hopefully we'll learn something because what I think may happen here is
it.
That... Is
so
that,
Robert, thank you. Yeah. And thank you, University of Wyoming, for having us out. This is crazy.
I think we're
road tripping.
I think there's a real chance that these students, before they listen to the podcast and see all the stuff about the show, are going to be like, who are these guys? And then they're going to do it, and they're still going to be like, who are these guys?
Yeah.
So we'll see. Guys? We'll see if this makes a decent impact or not.
Yeah,
but we are
sure,
on our way, so that's
sure.
cool. The main thing we wanted to cover in this podcast is we just got back from the one day, we flew out and we flew right back, one day trip to the LA Auto Show. And thank you to those of you that said hi to us. We actually met multiple people. We saw James and Thomas from Throttle House.
Yeah, hey guys.
We saw
nice
Matt Hogan from Road and Track. It was cool to see him.
Yeah.
We saw many others of you as well. It was a very interesting day to be here because you're there as press, which means you get more access, but in some cases you still didn't get enough access. Like the C8 Corvettes were locked and you couldn't get in them.
Which I can't believe.
I don't understand why that was.
They're going to throw them away anyway. They should just open the cars.
I know we sound like spoiled journalists to say that because if you go on a normal day, you can't get in stuff, but generally everything's open. And here was the C8 closed, the GT 500 was closed, the Mach-E was mobbed. We're going to talk about a lot of these things. There was a lot to see, as always, so that's the primary thing. There's a few questions at the back. Many of them are about the Phaeton, but I think I covered most of that up front.
It's all part of the lore.
Oh,
although,
yeah.
We're going to learn so much about
these cars. We are.
And answer the questions rattling around in our heads about these cars.
Should we do this? Yes. So the quick hits of the auto show that I have to touch on really quickly. You may have seen the Instagram post that was me driving an Alfa Giulia on the ring. They had an Alfa Giulia connected to a set of Corso, and they had the suspension connected to casters, essentially.
We think the car was gutted of its drivetrain to make it lighter because it was on the hydraulics, actually, at the suspension points on the car.
That would pull it down.
To actually make it feel like it. And the instrument panel lit up. It was showing your speed.
Yes, your RPM, so everything like that.
It was a well-done system.
Very true.
It was really cool.
The problem with it was you had 5 minutes a person, and you just got as far as you could down the ring in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And everybody ahead of me, I watched them really, really struggle, and I thought, this is interesting. And then I got in and realized the reason you're struggling is because there was a noticeable, not unsurmountable, but a noticeable delay in your inputs. So you had to be ahead of what you actually needed the car to do. And that took some getting used to. And I grazed a wall and would have done the equivalent of taking off a mirror in the first 30 seconds. And then I was okay. Also, there was no braking other than brake as if you have no power brakes as hard as you possibly can. It was the only way to get the system to brake. So I nearly overran a first corner. That was interesting. That was the whole reason I did it, was just to see what's this simulator like, knowing what it's like to go.
Yeah.
And you guys, by the way, you've just seen, we just dropped that YouTube video of this year's pilgrimage trip, and it's made many of you jealous, and I don't mean this to be tacky, but that's the reason we put it out there, because we want you to come with us.
Kind of, yeah.
So it's out, and having been, and remembering having been very recently, it was interesting to drive this thing and see how the simulator did. It was a very cool simulator, but there was just a little bit of a delay.
Well, what I don't love about the idea is that it's actually kind of giving the Quadrifoglio a bad name, because people who have never driven the car sit in the simulator and they think, well, that's how the Alfa actually responds. It couldn't be further from the truth.
Oh, true. It would be much better.
The turn-in on that car is crisp and amazing.
Yeah, it's great.
The throttle response, the braking, all that stuff, it's excellent. But then when you connect it to a simulator that has a delay, and I'm worried that people are driving this game and driving the simulator and coming away thinking, well, that was all right, but the Alpha doesn't drive too great. No. You've got to disconnect those two, of course, when you have the game, but they've installed it in a Quadrifoglio, which is not the right car. I mean, anyway.
It's cool.
Games still need to improve vastly, unless you have the $30,000 simulator or whatever.
Well, the interface is always the trouble, for sure,
It very much is. So I was thinking about this, thinking, all right, the interface and the controls are delayed and sticky, and, you know, it does not represent what you're actually doing. But still kind of cool.
Yeah, for sure. You saw some of our snarky comments, some of my snarky comments, that related to being at the LA Auto Show. I want to revisit a couple real quickly. There are three cars being produced right now where their companies are celebrating major anniversaries, decade anniversaries, and the car was around a decade ago. The first one is the Dodge Challenger, which is celebrating an anniversary, 50th anniversary, maybe 40th, I forget. But I think it's 50th as well. And but yet what's interesting is that current version of the Challenger was around at the 40th. Now, in the case of the Challenger, there's a lot of new engines, there's a lot of changes. If you buy a modern Challenger, like brand new Challenger, doesn't look much different, a little bit, but not much different than the one in 09. But there's a lot of different engines. I mean, come on, think about the Hellcat and the Demon and the wide body, and there's a lot of different versions of that. So now we step over to the other two culprits. One is the Nissan GTR, which is celebrating its 50th anniversary, but it also was around at the 40th. That car's changed a lot as well. Then we have the primary culprit, which you saw on Instagram, and that is the Z car is celebrating its 50th anniversary. There is a special 370Z 50th anniversary edition. And how is it different from the 40th anniversary edition 370Z? I'm not sure.
We saw one at a parking garage, and I came out and I said, hey, Todd, is that a 40th or a 50th anniversary Z?
Seriously.
I can't tell.
Seriously.
They're exactly alike. The fascia just a little bit.
That one in a decade, except for a tiny fascia change, is essentially the same car.
I can give the GTR a hall pass because it's the GTR. Okay, it came out, it's still around, you've updated it. All right, we don't love it, but all right.
Yeah.
But the Z car, it's the exact same car as the 40th anniversary?
10 years later, look, you can still buy this car.
We're here to make observations and tease the car manufacturers and tell you what we're thinking about these cars when it strikes you. Of course, things can change when we drive them, and we're actually walking through the show thinking, all right, that car, what do we put it with for a TV episode
or maybe that goes on YouTube?
Sure. Yep. We're actually walking around kind of shopping that way, but
we're also
shopping for you guys on the podcast, because when we drive a car and we put it on YouTube as a fast blast, we're always thinking in the headspace, well, maybe we recommend this, new or used, to you guys listening on the podcast. So that there's a lot going on, but the observations, for good or bad, you need to hear some of these cars. And we have a list of things that stuck out.
For sure.
Since I'm driving, Todd is going to be calling everything out and going to be reading some of the social media questions. But I want you to hear some of these observations. So when you look at photos or you see one of these cars, you can take note. You can see what we're seeing as well.
I
want you to be able to do that. So I start in wherever. I've got a list in my head going.
I know you do. We'll
but
just jump in.
Start in where whatever car you want to start with.
I'm going to start a weird place and then go to something close to your heart. But I'm going to start a weird place, and that is Karma. Fisker was Henrik Fisker's company.
Yeah.
He made the Fisker Karma.
Yeah.
He got bought up by a Chinese company, and it became just the Karma. This is not to be confused with the new car that Henrik Fisker is making that's supposed to be kind of a Model 3 competitor electric car. Forget that for a second.
So it's weirdly Karma that he got bought out.
It's weird Karma, yeah.
Wait.
So they've called the company Karma now. They have revised what was the Fisker Karma to make it a new hybrid updated thing, but they just dropped two concept cars.
Yeah.
I wanted to say SEMA because it seemed like SEMA cars, but it's not. It's the LA Auto Show.
No, no, no.
These are, I think they called them the CS. It was like the Roadster and the hardtop. They are fantastic looking. It looks like a great variation of crazy, the best of Aston Martin styling. What I found interesting looking at them is the hoods on these things are massive. And you start taking a close look, they have these huge, like, I want to call them seagull doors. Because they're these
long wing doors.
Yeah, exactly. But what's interesting is if you look at it closely, you can suddenly realize that the reason the hood is so long, again, there's not an engine. It's all built on the same chassis as their big four-door, which is massive. And the seats for driving are where the back seats would be on the four-door.
Yeah,
and everything in front of those two seats is just hood now.
I have not looked up specs for the wheelbase. I think they're pretty similar. But the SC2, I believe, is what that coupe is called. 1,100 horsepower, four motors, and 350 miles of range is what Karma is claiming at this point.
We'll see.
Now, they're clearly repositioning themselves as even higher end. I mean, the Karma, when it came out, was what? 80, 90, somewhere in there?
It was right around 100, I think, when you finally started buying it,
So that was the first iteration, but now the company's been reinvented. And to be honest, I'm giving them a fresh start in my mind. I mean, we all kind of tease Fisker Karma because of, you know, all kinds of reasons. Build quality and the lack of interior space and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But they've reinvented themselves. They've actually put quite a bit of innovation into these two concepts.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm giving them a pass because of styling and what they're claiming. It's going to be a high-end luxury object. It is.
For sure, for sure.
I mean, the hood on these, as you said, is massive, and there's no more storage. The doors, these long doors open, and you get a little tiny luggage compartment on
each side. Cubby on each side. It's ridiculous.
It's like, wait, so it's not really useful, but it's a big car with a huge hood, and there's not a gasoline engine under there?
It's very bizarre.
What is there?
The hood,
what is this, then?
The hood could handle a V16.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And almost a V16 behind the front wheels. I mean, it's a massive hood.
They have a dog bone shaped battery.
Yeah.
And obviously the passenger compartment kind of fits in the indentations, and then they built the rest of the car around it.
Yeah.
To be honest, it looks impressive. The construction of these prototypes looks really great, and the styling looks really appealing. So as a luxury item at that level, I wish them all success, and I
will see.
I hope. I mean, I have high hopes for it, but you know, I wasn't feeling the reinvention of the company until I saw these two concepts.
Okay,
I thought, all right. They're still trading on some of the styling, but the SC2, that new coupe, really original, pretty cool.
That does look very cool. Okay, now we're going to go something more real and closer to your heart. First time you and I have actually seen one.
Yeah.
The Porsche Taycan.
Yeah.
Which, the first impressions I have to say here are, it's smaller than you think it is.
Smaller than the Panamera.
It is genuinely smaller than the Panamera. You see them parked next to each other and you realize it. It is honestly the middle ground between the current 911, the 992, which is getting quite big. Because at the airport, we saw just the back end of a 992 parked in a parking space. And I went, oh, look, there's a Panamera. No, that's a 992. It's gotten big. But
it's not that big.
Yeah,
it's still.
But it's between the 992 and the Panamera. It's between the two. It is still a four-door, four-seat.
I'm going to own one someday.
Okay. I got in the back seats carefully, because the front seats, once it's in a driver's position for me, there's two problems going on in the back seats. And this, I realize I'm a tree and I have a big long torso, I know this, but it is impossible for me to sit in the back seats of the Taycan and not have my head touching the roof.
You had more of a problem than I did. I mean,
yes,
I think you're just your torso is a tree, because we're the same height.
Yes, that's true.
And then
a weird
you
torso,
get
yes.
in and you're like, ah, this is super uncomfortable. I'm you know, half as uncomfortable as you are, but then, you know,
it is the kind of thing where if you wanted to go to dinner and you wanted to take four adults to dinner, you'd be fine. If you wanted to go cross country or road tripping like we are today, you don't want to do that with adults in the back.
It'd be rough.
But it is a great executive car for the way executive cars will get used. And again, like I say, you want to run errands and you've got even, you know, big teenagers in the back, everybody's going to be fine.
Super impressive.
The front seat has tons of space. And I got in it at one point, and I moved the seat both down and back farther than I thought it would be possible.
Oh, good.
It dropped into the floor and went way, way back. So finding a seating position at any size is easy to do. And, of course, it just has that really nice Porsche build quality. I bet it's going to drive really well. I was surprised by how compact it is. Very cool.
Yeah, and, you know, I have to put my Porsche love aside for a second and turn a critical eye, because I always look at cars and I think, what don't I like? I'm looking things over, and that comes from my design background. I'm looking over design on screen or in the flesh, and I'm, you know, looking at the thing, and I think, all right, what don't I like? And, you know, trying to turn a critical eye in an effort to either improve the design or find something, you know, where it could be improved or whatever that is. All right, so I'm looking at this thing, and I think, all right, well, build quality is there, and Porsche has... It's been out long enough so we're used to the shape, but Porsche is introducing us to electric cars in a kind manner. It looks and feels like a car.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like a spaceship and, it's got a giant screen in the middle and, this is a weird interaction with this. It just feels like a car. It felt
Interesting
like
point.
A compact sedan executed by Porsche. We've had the Panamera around long enough to think, okay, I can see this. All right.
Sure.
You know, and of course the build quality is amazing and, you know, all the interaction is sort of like just car. High-end, expensive, but this makes sense. So I liked it for that reason.
Yeah,
and then when you add the Porsche love on top of that, then, of course, I really can't wait to drive it.
Sure.
But, you know, they're introducing this as, you know, still relating to what we know cars to be. And I still maintain that Porsche, of any manufacturer, is able to be the most successful at integrating an electric car because none of their cars have had grills. The 911, 356, you know. Growing up, you know, those cars growing up never had grills.
Yeah,
now,
good
obviously,
point.
Cayennes and Panameras have grills, but, you know, that they introduce this design language and it just works. They don't have to have some sort of funny stamped out shape that mimics a grill.
Interesting point.
You know, that is not. There's no air intakes.
Yeah,
but
interesting point.
They don't have to do that. So it's very interesting to see this and be introduced to the shapes, having the Panamera, and it's a little bit smaller, so it feels like a baby brother to it.
Yeah.
And there's a sense about it that it will drive well.
Yeah, it does
take
seem like
it. Take the badge
like
off the hood, and there's a sense that it probably will drive pretty well.
You also bring up a great point there, and that is, I hadn't thought about this until we're talking about it now. If you just walked in and saw the Taycan shape exactly like it is, didn't know it was an electric car, and somebody told you it was a gasoline car, you'd go, fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it has things that differentiate it, yes, and the wheels are actually the only real giveaway that it's looking for aerodynamics and it's an electric car.
Sure, sure.
But otherwise, it could be a gasoline car. It's just, it's an interesting design for a car, and it feels that way inside as well.
Yeah.
The fact that it's electric is kind of just a bonus here, and I think it'll be very interesting to drive. Quite intrigued by it.
Yeah.
The theme of the show for me, I know this sounds weird, I didn't go in expecting a theme, but the theme of the show I kind of took from was what I would call the tables have turned. Because you and I were talking about the fact that I think we've been going to the LA Auto Show on press days for a decade now.
About that.
Maybe a little more, but it certainly is a decade solid and unbroken. And when we started going as journalists, I have to bring up the obvious, Lincoln was nothing to see here. Okay?
And we've teased about Lincoln
Cadillac,
for a long time.
And Cadillac was doing really well. Interesting stuff that we hadn't seen from Cadillac in decades, and they were doing really well. Similarly, Mercedes, we were looking at a decade ago and going, there's nothing here that compels me but a bunch of big engines.
Yeah.
And BMW was killing it.
Yeah.
Back to the theme of the tables have turned. I want to talk about Cadillac versus Lincoln, and I want to talk about Mercedes versus BMW. Let's start Cadillac versus Lincoln. I got in... Okay, Cadillac now has changed their nomenclature. Again... The CT6 is the big boy now. So you have CT6, 5, and 4. Those are the equivalents of whatever the XTS was, the big one. Then the CTS and the ATS. So those are now called the CT6, which has been out for at least a year, CT5, CT4. The interiors of these are nice, The seats are actually pretty solid. GM hasn't always done very good seats. I actually think the seat comfort, front and rear, a lot of the nice cars right now have terrible rear seat comfort, by the way.
Yeah.
The
yeah,
rear seats in these Cadillacs were actually good compared to the competitors, and the seats felt good, and the interiors felt like nice Chevrolet interiors.
Oh.
But that's the problem, is then we walked across to Lincoln. And Lincoln now, while they have taken every single SUV that Ford has thought about making, I'm waiting for the Mustang Mach-E Lincoln version.
Yeah.
Anyway, they should just call that the McConaughey. Can they just call it the McConaughey? The Lincoln McConaughey.
That hadn't occurred to me. I wish you hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, it's going to be
the Lincoln version of that.
The Lincoln McConaughey. That's what it's going to be. It can't be the Mach-E. So we'll just call it the McConaughey.
The McConaughey.
Anyway.
Oh, my gosh.
But they have everything. They have every single SUV that Ford makes is now made in a Lincoln version. And 10 years ago, everything Lincoln was making felt like a marginally upscale version of the Ford product. Now it feels like its own stuff.
Cadillac feels
like a marginally upscale version of the Chevy product. They've swapped roles.
Which I can't believe. And your observations are absolutely dead on. Because we got in the Cadillac, and it's the CT6, so it was not the V, but it was the CT6, and we're looking at materials, we're looking at how materials interact with each other, and they interface, and where they finish off, and taper off, and, you know, all the details that kind of matter in an expensive car.
Yes, for
sure.
And
what Cadillac has cultivated over the years as, wow, they're really doing something, kicking Lincoln right in the teeth. That has absolutely changed.
Interesting.
And I'm picking away, I'm looking at interactions and seams, and, you know, touching materials, and thinking, I'm not too impressed. This really was kind of a phoned-in effort. There was not a lot going on here. It's okay, but that's not good enough for Cadillac.
It's upscale Chevy, and what's interesting is it makes for a nice luxury car, but it doesn't make for something that feels like it stands out or stands on its own separate from the product line it's connected to of General Motors. Lincoln, I think, somehow is taking, because we made an effort to get in the Ford product of these SUVs and then get in the Lincoln ones as well.
Mm-hmm.
Lincoln has, I'm not saying it's everybody's style. It's actually not my style at all, if I'm honest. But Lincoln's interiors right now don't look like anyone's interiors. They look like just what they're doing, design language.
They do.
The materials
are
very
kudos.
High-end.
They've needed to do this for a long time.
Yes.
They finally found something.
They don't look like anybody else. And it's easy to look at other automakers and go, oh, well, that looks like something. No, Lincoln's got their own interior language. Their seats are crazy looking. They're very comfortable. You can get lots of different kind of unexpected color combos. Everything is power. Feels very high end. It does. It's a little. And this is going to sound weird. It's a little Liberace for me. and half of the audience went, it's a little who? I'm sorry.
Yes.
But it is. It's a little Liberace for me. It's quite ostentatious.
Okay.
But it is very much them. And you don't touch anything and go like, that's not very well done. It's all very well done.
Interesting.
Even in their low-end stuff. We got in their low-end one, which is the new one called the Corsair, which is the Lincoln version of the Ford Escape. This is not a high-end car.
And yet it still felt...
And it still felt like it.
Pretty high-end. You thought, all right, well, that's a nice touch. And, you get that feature on here. And, well, that's pretty cool for what you're getting. And I actually asked the Lincoln rep, I said, what is it about your naming convention with all the SUVs going on? So that is the Corsair starting at the bottom, and then it goes to Nautilus, then Aviator, then Navigator.
Yep.
I said, what is the deal with the naming convention? And he said, travel. Travel is the common theme, which I actually am kind of impressed with, to be honest.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
Kind of cool.
They at least found something. It's not CT6.
It's not, alphanumeric, whatever.
Cadillac's got so many good names in their history, and they've left them all.
Yeah, they have. So Lincoln has found a theme. They found something very distinctly them.
Yep.
You start to go up from the Corsair, and you look around, and you think, all right, well, this is a nice touch, and that feels pretty good. And actually, I do like the styling for what they are. They're not my thing either. I wouldn't own one of them either. But for their market and for what they're going after, you think, okay, so they're hitting what their sales goals are.
Agreed.
for a design brief or a marketing brief.
Completely they are. Yep.
Thinking, okay, that's pretty cool. So kudos to Lincoln for pulling it out and having a pretty cool model range. I'm still not a huge fan of the Continental, to be honest.
But why is that thing still around? But at the same time, though, those interiors...
MKZ, what's the sedan?
The MKX. They live up to these themes we're talking about. It is MKZ, because the X was one of their SUVs.
Anyway, we're getting it wrong. See, there
Clearly, we need to study Lincoln.
I can't remember,
but the names we know.
Interesting.
But the Continental, with the suicide doors or even without, it stays in this same line of really good interiors. But what they've also done that I'm impressed with, and we're going to come back in a minute to others that have done this swap. What I'm impressed with is how much they've created their own style, but yet as you step up through the model range, things get noticeably nicer. This has been a struggle for German automakers for a bit, where it's very nice at the low end, but yet it doesn't get nice enough as you step up. And the Lincolns step up, which is very impressive
as well.
And
knowing where to cut it off and how to make that impression at each of the four model ranges, how do you actually delineate that? They've done a great job doing that. So that was a huge surprise. You pointed that out, that was a huge surprise. And, you know, the seats and the way they work, they seem very carefully paid attention to.
This was the thing that started a kind of a recurring theme for us, walking around the auto show and just thinking, where was this company? Pick your company. Where was this company a decade ago? And so we'll be back with BMW and Mercedes.
So there you are wrenching on your car and you round off a bolt head or you strip out a screw head or the nut you need, of course, is frozen in rust. We've all been there. Now there's a great solution from Rocket Socket, a company which has a legacy of making fastener removal tools with proven technology. Rocket Socket has created a new premium set of removal sockets for damaged fasteners of all kinds. They easily remove any damaged or rusted or frozen, stripped out or rounded out fasteners. And most importantly, all of the sockets are 100% made in the USA with only high-grade American steel. These are incredibly cool and perfectly simple. If the socket fits the fastener, whether it's a bolt, a nut, a screw head, whatever, it won't let go. The secret here is the proven Razor Grip Superior Removal Technology. All of these sockets work with all standard ratchets, impact wrenches, and power tools. We've stripped more bolts than we can count, so we're excited to use these socket sets and have Rocket Socket as a sponsor. Go to therocketsocket.com to choose the most useful fastener removal socket set for yourself or give a really useful gift this year. All of the sets work for all the other projects you've got going on and around your house too. As well as receiving free shipping, you can now use the code EVERYDAY to save 15% on the socket set purchased through the web store at therocketsocket.com.
You may not be buying a car right now, but you're probably still looking. We're all looking. We're all looking all the time. And it seems there's always a new place to search. That's why we love AutoTempest.com.
With AutoTempest, you only enter your search one time and you see the results from Cars.com, eBay, all of Craigslist, and many more. Or you can jump over to AutoTrader and Car Gurus without entering anything new.
So if you're looking for fun or you need a car right now, don't go all over. Start at AutoTempest.com. All the cars, one search.
The weather's changing, but the sun is still out and still baking your car's interior.
All you need is a custom sunscreen from Covercraft. These foldable sunscreens fit perfectly in the windshield of your car, and they keep your car a lot cooler while you're off enjoying the sunshine or whatever you're doing. I have used these for years, and I'm telling you, I swear by them.
These custom sunscreens from Covercraft are available in a whole range of colors, and they're a simple, affordable way for you to keep your car cooler all summer long and protected from damaging UV rays all year long.
We swear by our custom sunscreens from Covercraft. It's one of our favorite car accessories. And remember, you can get 10% off your car sunscreen by using the code EVERYDAY right now at covercraft.com, or you can follow the link from our sponsors page.
We all have a lot of to-do lists, and some of them get quite long. You know, drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea, though. Let's add save hundreds of dollars on car insurance to that list. And the good thing is, you don't have to drop off or pick up anything.
All you have to do is go to geico.com and in 15 minutes you could save, you've heard it before, 15% or more on your car insurance.
Extra money in your pocket? This just may be the most rewarding to-do thing on your list today.
Staying with our auto show theme of what happens in 10 years, the table's turning. When we were first coming to the LA Auto Show on press days, we were in love with everything BMW was doing, and Mercedes was failing to resonate. Here we are a decade later, and it's not because we're a decade older, mind you. Here we are tables have turned here. There's so many there's so many near misses going on at BMW, and there's so many things where I also have to say that Mercedes isn't really my style in the same way Lincoln isn't my style. But okay. I can't okay. help but climb into their cars and just think, wow, this interior is awesome. The pieces are great. I like, I mean, they've just done well. I'm not the market for them. In the sure, same way, I'm not the market sure. for Lincoln, but yet I can't deny when I sit in their cars or I see, oh, I see what you've done with your lineup. I think they've clarified their lineup in what cars are what, except for the fact I don't understand why the GT four-door exists in the CLS, but separate thing. They've clarified their lineup
product with the, planning.
With the GLs and the you know, the A, the B, the E, the S. They've clarified, and I love what they're doing with their interiors, and they feel like luxury cars no matter what level you buy in.
This is true, and I do like the fact that they have clarified a driving enthusiast part. Even though they're a high-end aspirational brand, they're still bringing a driving enthusiast feel or look or mm-hmm. whatever that is to the table in mm-hmm. a lot of their cars. So it's not just, like you said a decade ago, where it's just, you know, rocking big engines, you know, burnouts all day long kind of thing, and everything else was just sort of marginal. They've yeah. got something in every class. They've got something that speaks to your sense of taste and luxury and sporty driving and, you know, tech. Tech yes. is dominating, and yes. they're killing it. It just seems like every Mercedes we get into at this point is just, it wows you.
And they found a consistent style themes without them looking forced. And we've talked a lot about yeah. how various brands, yeah. Lexus Maw is a great example, various brands where you pick a style theme that is really struggling on some of your cars. Mercedes is figuring that out right now, too. I think they have similar design language. I don't even recognize this stuff as well as you do, but similar design language across all of their models that seems to create a familial sense of style without feeling like, oh, that just doesn't look good on that.
Right, right. Well, like we saw the new Nissan Sentra is just the mini-me to the Altima, which is the mini-me to the Maxima.
I'll go you just, one better.
Really?
The Versa, the Sentra, and the Altima are... Each car is 10% bigger than the last.
They're just like Russian nesting dolls is all they are.
Yes, they are. Right? They're rusting nesting... Yeah, that's perfect.
And Russian they're rusting.
There you go. They're rusting Russian nesting dolls. Can we stay there? There we go. That's perfect.
Seriously. Well, so switching to BMW, and they did introduce the BMW M2CS, so super lightweight, gorgeous, we want the car, we want to drive this car, looks great, and very much catering to enthusiasts. But then they've also introduced the M8... And the M8 Grand Coupe.
Yes.
And in the metallic eggplant, which
yes.
is actually kind of lovely.
But I think it's horrific, but anyway,
we're looking at these cars and looking around their portfolio now because the new 2 Series Grand Coupe is included. Okay?
Which is now a front-wheel drive
chassis. It's now front-wheel drive.
Yes.
So it actually, in a strange way, because of the new sheet metal on the floor, because of the new styling direction, it makes the M2 look dated. It does. But the M2 looks tasty and attractive, and
yeah,
it
yeah.
attracts us to it
yep.
because of, A, what it is, and, you know, the styling is still good. It's just, it's looking a little bit kind of behind the rest of BMW's portfolio. So we're thinking, okay, we're getting in various cars, and I'm trying to define what BMW wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
We know what they used to be, and that was the ultimate driving machine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And everything else came second. All the way to their luxury cars, all the way to the top end.
Yeah,
everything
fair
else
point, fair
was
point.
Second place
yeah.
to the driving experience. But now, define what is BMW. And I say that liking the new 3 Series. I do.
You do.
And
yeah,
I liked a lot fan. Of stuff about the Z4. Please watch the Z4 versus Boxster piece.
Yeah. That car did well in that conversation.
Season 5.
The end of Season 5, yep.
That's right. So that's on Amazon Prime. I actually really like that car, and I do like the styling. But I'm coming to you trying to define, all right, with the rest of their models and everything they introduce, give me a compelling reason. Why shouldn't I go over to Mercedes and be wowed?
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, that was a couple of things. When we got in the front and back of the new, this is the front-wheel drive 2 Series. And it is, I hate to say it because Nissan just released this, but I'm comparing and contrasting, and they look kind of similar. It is the BMW Sentra.
Oh,
it is. Look at the lines on the new Sentra. Pull them up. Look at the lines on the new Sentra and the way that the hood kind of drops down. Look at the scale of the new Sentra. It's the BMW Sentra. It is a front-wheel drive economy car in BMW clothing, and to my astonishment, if you're going to go that route as a car maker, if you're going to go that route, okay, you're going to do it for economy and packaging, right? But then it's not attractive, and B, the back seat is unusable for adults. That is a problem.
Yeah, it really is.
That's a real problem.
Look,
I know I'm not the measurement. I've already talked about how I'm not the measurement. But we posted the posting on Instagram. I literally had my head cocked to the side, and I had my feet getting crushed sitting behind Paul.
Well, I was not comfortable. The driver's seat was fine, but then I got in the back seat, and my legs were not comfortable.
Nope.
I didn't want to be there longer than 5 seconds. It hurt getting in and out. That's not a good thing,
yeah.
And especially from a stylistic standpoint. You said, all right, so we're going in a new direction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, look at the car, and it rang true in person. It was the BMW style guide applied to a new proportion.
Yes.
Same headlights, same
grille. Yep.
Got the Hofmeister, got the, you know, various, you know, eye-catching, highlight-catching pieces around the car that are, you know, very similar throughout the product portfolio on a new platform. Okay. And then what's redeeming about it? Look, we're being hard on it, but we've got high hopes. We like BMW. We want to come away going, all right, this is the new direction. This is cool.
Mm-hmm.
You've, you know, revisited, or you're giving us the new thing again, whatever that is. You're bringing it back.
Yeah.
We haven't found that.
Well, we got in the...
And despite liking these other two cars I mentioned.
For sure. We got in the M8 Grand Coupe. Okay?
Yeah.
The M8.
Yeah.
This is a huge, fast Autobahn bomber, okay? That's what it's for. It is a...
And it will. I'm sure
it is an executive super cruiser. But what I couldn't believe when I got in it is, and we all talked about it, and again, back to the fact that we're big guys, the car swallowed us.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
felt really, really low with, you know, we teased the Camaro for having bad visibility. The M8's every bit as bad.
I mean,
and it's a big sedan.
The Camaro's a sports car and designed to look and feel like it. So, okay.
You felt buried in the M8 like you're in some sort of bomb shelter, which is the feeling of the Camaro, even though I agree with you. It kind of plays to the Camaro's attitude.
Yeah.
This is an M8 BMW. Yeah. Why on earth do I feel that way in this car? It's the car sitting still felt huge.
Yeah.
Because you were so low in it. I was surprised by that as well. I want more from BMW as an enthusiast, but I'm aware of the fact you can see it happening. You can see a BMW with the new BMW Sentra. You can see BMW going toward sales and not being concerned about dynamics, but I still think even that BMW 2 Series is a problem in backseat room.
I wanted to come in thinking, all right, okay, so this is BMW's new direction. All right, let's embrace it. You didn't like sitting in it. Didn't like looking at it. I hope it's nice to drive because that's the only thing left.
That's a fair point. And they've been the grand bastion of making cars. Look at that 1 Series wagon we didn't get. Look at a lot of... BMW has been the sole holdout that offers you rear-wheel drive cars that are small.
And manual transmissions, too. Like, hey, enthusiasts,
we're walking,
still got your back kind of feeling.
We're walking away from that now, which is genuinely too bad. Before we move on completely to a new topic, I want to revisit something on Cadillac real quick that I didn't mention. By the way, the CT5, which is the CTS, we were talking Hofmeister kink at BMW. They almost had a Hofmeister kink on that car, and then they realized, oh, wait, we're probably going to get sued. Look at what's going on.
They had a Hofmeister accident on that
thing.
They
did. Somebody had a seizure while driving a Hofmeister kink on that car. There is the weirdest, and it is an applique. It looks like a window, but it's not. There is a black shape surrounded by chrome that is in the C pillar of that car, and we sat there, I'm not kidding you, mouths agape trying to figure it out.
It's a puddle of bright work.
It's genuinely ugly.
Could have been treated in a myriad of different ways that I think would have been more successful, because as you pull all those lines towards the rear, I think the CT5 looks weak. I don't think it has a taller rear end, a strong stance. I think the Stinger, for example, has a strong look about it.
It does, it does.
And I didn't get that sense from the CT5. I'm thinking, all right, if you don't like the looks of a car, but yet you like how it's built, how it drives, all those things, all right. But, you know, we're running out of redeeming qualities here.
Well,
and that's without even driving these cars.
But jumping back to what we just were saying about BMW, the last redeeming hope for the BMW's new 2 Series is that it drives well. On the flip side,
there's nothing left.
On the flip side, though, for Cadillac, We know for a fact that GM has some of the best chassis engineers working today. I bet you that CT5 drives really well.
I bet you it does too. I hope it does.
It's just there's the interior is not as nice as materials as I would like, and I don't understand. And it's only on the CT5. What's going on with that C-pillar Brightwork fake mirror window thing? It's weird.
Look, you're probably wondering, if we're not liking it and other people don't, how does something like this get made? It's internal politics. It's egos. It's this manager having more rank than that manager. Mm. It's all kinds of reasons. It's committees. It's here's what we can build. Here's this is a little bit more cheaper to make. It's all kinds of reasons that come into play.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, all right, so that design kind of satisfies this. Car companies need champions to push. They need champions in every department to push. And those are the people that, you know, whatever the theme of that car manufacturer is, and we see that manifested successfully in some car manufacturers and not so successfully in others.
Excellent point. You're right. We have two that we need to go into that are hype machines because they have just the mere mention of their names brings out people's thoughts.
Standing one, up on the back of your neck.
We'll do it in a second. We're not going to get there yet, but one, we're going to end on the Land Rover Defender before we go into questions. But before that, we have to spend some time on the Mustang Mach-E, which we have now seen in person.
Yes.
Was it you that named it the Mustang Mach-Me?
Well, somebody else on Twitter called that out.
The Mustang Mach-Me.
But
that's
I thought
my new
about the
favorite.
Same thing.
That's pretty good.
M-O-C-K,
I really do like that. Yes.
It's there it is on the show stand. So
there
we
it
saw
is.
Both
blue and white
flavors, the GT and the base models. And I do maintain that the wheelbase is slightly too long. It gives it an odd proportion, and proportions everything, especially when it comes to sales. People have to like these things how they look. And so all those styling elements that I told you about, I was looking for those elements. But then I came across one that we had mentioned but hadn't spent too much time on, and that is the door handles. Mm. Now, at this point, you know that the
lack of door handles
does not have any, okay?
Yes.
It has, for the two front doors, a very small fixed handle that's more like just a grab handle for a drawer.
Yep.
But how you open the door is a push button. So it's an electronic latch. You push the button. And a solenoid pops it open.
It looks like a doorbell. It looks like a doorbell on the door.
Is.
You press it,
it looks
and the
like
door
a modern,
pops open.
It like, looks like one of those Ring doorbells.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
So you push it on the front doors, you know where to pull.
Yep.
On the back doors, there's nothing to pull on. Ford explicitly has said, you push the button, the door will pop open for you, and you put your fingers in the seam, and you pull the door open. This is real. This is after decades of all of our parents telling us, honey, don't put your fingers in the door.
Yep.
You'll get them slammed. You're going to get hurt.
Yep.
And after, you know, emergency service personnel wanting to get you out of a wrecked car, the first thing they hook onto is the handle to pull it open. If the electrics go, if the batteries die, there's no way to open that door from the outside. There doesn't appear to be.
Well, but you bring up the larger point, and that is we literally are talking about a scenario here where we are walking up to doors, crowbar style, and curling our fingers around the edge to open the door.
So what about kids? Surely there's parents with kids who work at Ford. And now we're being told you push the button, so you're pushing in on the door that then pushes back out at you to open.
Yep.
Put your fingers in the door awkwardly and pull it open.
Peel it open, yep.
Now, what happens when these cars get dirty? There's going to be a whole bunch of muck and gunk. The handle is kind of the last delicate place to open the door without getting your hands dirty if it's wintertime outside. Okay, forget about that. How about kids?
Yeah, I agree
with
you.
Now, the kids are jostling and they're trying to get in and they're playing and they're banging against the car and ha-ha. And the door pops open and then somebody accidentally bumps their shoulder back against the door when somebody's fingers are in it. Little fingers in there are going to be the downfall. I'm calling it now.
But I do think Ford's going to have to do some sort of change or fix to that because I just think
that's
it also isn't usable. That is a weird place of all places because so many times when you and I talk about where we wish the design department would win, this is a place where the design department won and I am baffled by it. Because why? And I'm coming back to it. For some reason, Elon Musk got hurt by door handles as a child. So none of his cars are allowed to have normal doors.
Yeah.
Somehow, that has leaked its way into Ford. I was talking about how I know they're watching Tesla. That's leaked its way into Ford, and now we have to hate door handles? Folks, door handles work. And
they
now
do,
we have
there's a styling element that breaks up the surface that if you don't like it, it breaks it up.
Now
it's
we
nice.
Have rear doors on the Mustang Mach-E that do not have a handle of any kind.
I'm really concerned about this. This just I come from the design standpoint. I think, all right, you just want a clean surface. Okay. But, you know, reality and function and, you know, people interacting with your car, that takes precedence.
Well, I mean, I know we're hammering on this, but it was a really... the minute Paul discovered it, we all started talking about it. We all stood there just shocked.
Can you imagine little fingers in the door and... they bump it back closed, and somebody's going to scream bloody murder, and
we just started thinking about what we do when we drive these cars for the show, too. Usability factors, the daily factor, the school run, the coffee run, the pile the kids or the grandparents or whoever in the back. This is. We started thinking about those factors and thought, that is a huge oversight in the name of, hey, look at us, we did something cool and crazy and futuristic, which brings me to the other styling at large. Seeing it in person... I'm baffled this is called a Mustang, because the only genuine Mustang, recognizable Mustang style elements I can see on it is the taillights.
Yeah.
And I said a couple of times, if you think about this, this is Paul and I standing there with Chance, and you all know Chance, and you all know Chance's Mustang love. The three of us are standing there, and I made the comment where I said, I don't think it looks anything like the Mustang, and I don't think it's attractive. And Chance instantly said, I like the taillights. But that's the irony, because the taillights are the only thing that looks like a Mustang. It doesn't look like a Mustang.
So therefore, what is Mustang DNA?
Exactly.
What about this vehicle?
Is it just the logo?
It's Mustang-y.
It's just the logo and something to talk about.
I suppose
so. And sequential taillights, I guess.
It's all marketing stuff at this point. All right, so let's move on.
Well, I had one other thought.
Okay, all right.
It was being here in the winter made me think of this, because you made a comment as well. Electric cars, I still feel like, are being designed for nice climates.
I do too.
What happens
when that? I
think
they need to spend time in the muck.
What happens when that rear door that has no door handle gets frozen shut in the winter?
Yeah.
What are you going to pull on?
You have to get in, climb into the back seat, and use your legs
and push
the
door from the outside
and kick it open.
Yes, because
that
everybody on the planet, and I'm not talking your door's frozen in 2 inches of ice. I'm talking about that. Any of you that live in a place that gets cold have had that thing where you pull on the door handle and it does that tiny little creak. You broke a little bit of ice away, but you've got a big handle to pull on.
Here's the problem.
Good luck.
The Mach-E was designed in Detroit.
Weird. Good point.
It gets cold and icy and nasty in Detroit.
I'm really wondering. I mean, yes, of course, we want to drive it. I'm really wondering about the usability, and we both think that rear door handle is going to come back and need a Ford fix.
I think it's going to need attention in a big way, but... You know, when car companies issue recalls, it's for things like, you know, that are fixable. You don't
new
have
outer
to,
door.
You don't have to collect the cars back to the factories and replace a thing. You have the dealers do that. So are we going to have dealers replace rear doors?
That's interesting. Let's
Yikes.
Move on to the other big hype machine, the Range Rover Defender. And actually, our shooter, Edgar, went to the big reveal the night before, and he was at the big reveal, and the big thing that they were saying at the big reveal, and Edgar enjoyed going, and I was really glad that he could go, big thing they were saying at the reveal that he was sharing with us is that Range Rover is looking at this as kind of the bottom of their lineup, like the more accessible everyday car for their lineup. It starts as low as $40,000. Now, you can get, if you get like the first versions, they start at $65,000 and go up, but they do start in the mid-40s. And you can get hybrid tech on them. And the other thing that they're excited about is making it modular. How would you like to make your Defender, sir? You know,
okay.
What pack do you want? There's all these different accessories. I mean, it's almost like Mini Cooper thinking applied to Range Rover.
A little bit, although you've heard me before. I caution anybody who applies, hey, it's endlessly modular, and you flip it and you reverse
it.
And, you know, reversible belts and jackets and shoes and all that stuff doesn't sell. It just doesn't.
But they're
I want my thing to be the thing.
I know. They're going very
so
modular.
So I caution
You've
them
got a lot of,
this.
Like, it's almost like G.I. Joe stuff. It's like, what little extra tech pack would you like to put on your truck? And it has the, oh, yeah, the one with it. It's that
nice.
Kind of stuff. It's,
nice.
It's all that kind of accessories kind of thinking. So they are doing that. They are interesting. But then the more we started looking, we came across, you specifically, Paul, came across a couple things where we went, wait, am I seeing what I think I'm seeing?
Look, I'm all for the new Defender. I think it looks rugged. I think it looks cool. I like it. Even the exposed fasteners on the inside. All right, cool, fitting. The instrument panel has buckets and cubbies and places to store stuff, mm-hmm. and it's going to get mm-hmm. dirty, and you can wipe it out. It's going to be just fine.
It's the Range Rover Wrangler in
it's
many
cool.
ways.
It is.
It's very cool. They've done that with Range Rover flavor. It does seem... I talked about how it's a nostalgia exercise. Like, they want to be the old Defender and make people remember that, but they want to bring it up modern, which is hard to balance. I think they've done a pretty good job there, both in styling and in interior.
I do, too.
The
I
interior
too.
Does simultaneously seem... This is almost impossible. It seems luxurious, but it also seems something where if you got everything muddy, you really would be okay hosing it out.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm amazed they did both. But go on to your other discoveries.
All right, so stylistically speaking, pretty cool looking.
Yeah.
All right, so we sat in it, pretty cool, feels rugged, feels well built, cool, like it. And then I start looking at the outside. You know how Todd and I have talked about piano black plastic, piano
yeah,
black
yeah.
material
mm-hmm.
for use in interiors. When designers discovered this, and the color and trim team discovered this, it got overused.
Big time, big time.
Because, yeah, it looks great in the showroom and really nice when it's dust-free, but how about in real-life use?
Yep.
Especially on places that you touch. Now we're finding it used sparingly interiors on places you don't touch. So, okay, they're still, you know, very attractive to your eye.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But if it's, you know, other materials where you interact with the car, great. All right. So the exterior... And roofs, specifically the roof of all the Defenders, are piano black. Now,
piano black plastic.
The two-door has the white top, so it's the ivory
yeah. Or the
white.
Ivory, so the ivory piano. Still the same
you
idea.
Can,
it's
you
piano
can specify.
Black plastic, essentially.
But piano black, and then one of them had a piano black center hood.
Hood
Even
and grill.
The diamond plate extra trim was also plastic. And I'm thinking, all right, let's talk about honesty of materials here. We've talked about this before. Using a material that is cheaper to manufacture and still looks good and feels good, that's what car manufacturers are going for.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some people pull it off, so other car companies don't really do a great job.
Sure, yeah.
But piano black on the exterior, and especially the roof, where you've got a roof rack and you're putting gear and, you know, getting up there constantly, and snow and ice, and you're taking these things off-road, this is not, you know, a luxury car that's just going to stay clean most of the time. It's a truck.
Theoretically.
You're going to beat it up.
Theoretically,
you're
going to
yes. get, you know, branch yes. scratches and, you know, Nevada pinstripes down the side of your car.
That's why the side isn't piano black.
Yeah, I guess
yeah.
so.
Anyway, yeah.
It's going to happen. Piano black
well,
as an exterior choice?
Let's go simpler than that.
What on earth?
The truck in front of you kicks up a rock and it scratches down your piano black. Done.
That's it.
Done.
And just, I mean, we're driving now. I'm getting rock kickups from all the semi-trucks all over the car.
Yeah.
It happens. So... All right, do you have to get the paint protection film all over your car?
Which would work. I'm
I
sure
suppose.
Expel could do that on the front of the piano black as well, and that's fine. But
I suppose.
I can't believe that they went with that material since it never looks clean and constantly gets scratched, and that is now your hood and roof material on an off-roader?
This is astounding to me.
That's amazing.
And look, I keep thinking, all right, these are concepts. These are not the real production cars. I'm kind of thinking they are.
The ones we were seeing now are. Yeah, I think so. I think
I'm
so.
I'm a bit worried.
Which brings me back to the other thing you noticed, which is the two-door.
Yeah, which proportionally, pretty
cool looking. It's very cool looking. There's a bit of a question mark, though, for the second row.
All right, so look at the rear passengers and look at the panel that is indeed just a urethane panel stuck to the glass.
The box that breaks up the back window.
It's
on the
right
side.
In the center of the back side windows with the Land Rover logo.
Yep.
It just blocks the view when you're sitting in the back seat.
If you were sitting in the back seat, the place you would look out the window is now entirely blocked by a plastic box of body cladding that is stuck on the outside of the window.
My mouth is hanging open. I'm thinking, okay, so what? Why is that there? And
it's
then I peer into the back and I'm thinking... That's exactly where backseat passengers would want to turn their head sideways and look out the window.
Yes.
Like
yes.
normal
like
human
do.
Beings.
Yes.
And you covered it up with a plastic panel. So you've got the one in the headliner above you.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the little tiny slit ahead of you and one behind you. But the main place you want to look outside? Nope. We covered that up.
With a big plastic box that just says Land Rover in the corner.
What?
Yeah. I mean, what? maybe that's to, you can plug modular things in if you got blank package. I'm sure that's what it actually is for.
But how about right over the top of the window? I'm fine with that.
Well, yeah, why doesn't it hover over the window, or why doesn't it move forward or back so that, I don't know, your rear passenger can see out?
I mean, these are the simple
things.
That's
weird. It's weird.
And I know designers want to push on the new and push on the different, and they're referencing things on the Defender, and they're, you know, pulling that back. Okay, I get that, but there's still got to be the functionality. And for all these things, it's just, you know, we haven't even driven these trucks and cars yet, and we're observing these things going, huh.
We're thinking about them as a car you're getting in daily, and you're using, and you're
we're
using
in
the real
world. Buying them.
Yeah.
And coming
yeah.
back to you listening to the podcast and saying, all right, so I'm interested in this car, truck, whatever.
Yeah.
How is it? You know, what compromises do you have to make? Now, we're not here to just tease car manufacturers endlessly, but this is just sort of like, I mean, how did some of these things slip by?
Well, yeah, how is this question, genuine question, getting answered? How is this usability thing getting solved? Because I think it will be issues that will come back up, and that just astonishes me. So there's the two hype cars to cover. We should cover two other manufacturers we just talking about booths in general. One was the Alfa Romeo booth, which was quite nice this year.
Yeah, it was.
Lots of great colors.
Gorgeous.
There was a green on the Alfa Romeo that the guy that likes Skittles colors, I still think it's a bridge too far. Though we have found the bridge too far for me for color, it is a hyper
like
green.
It's like safety yellow
it's
green.
It's the Lamborghini thing. Green. Is
it's
what
even
it is.
More intense than
but
that.
But it's that on a Giulia.
In
well, but I think it has to do with how much bigger the Giulia is and non-sports car looking that makes you kind of go, is that really the color for that? It's in some new Michael Bay movie that's on Netflix. So that's the reason that it's that crazy color. But I do have to say, by the way, side note, the filmmaker in me has to say this. The Michael Bay movie, and I'm not trying to do a plug, but I'm going to anyway, Ryan Reynolds is in it. It's called Six Underground.
Yeah, yeah.
The point is that he runs, as I understand the trailer, he runs a group of, like, international problem solvers that none of them exist. They're all, like, supposedly dead, okay?
Okay.
If you run a group of people that are in hiding and they make their living solving international crises because nobody knows they exist, do you want to drive a neon green anything anywhere?
That's funny.
Let's get it in black. I'm just saying, let's get it in black. Anyway, so there's that. But they do have that blue that Chance teases me by calling it Dodge Blue. But that
it's
Dodge
gorgeous.
Charger blue, that is
gorgeous.
A kind of their light blue on the Giulia, and it just, I wanted to just sit in that car for a bit.
Well, so I ran into an old classmate who is one of the directors of design for Icona, and we were talking. We were just chatting, getting a little bit of, not insider information, but he could only tell me, obviously, the things he could tell me, knowing that, you know, I'm telling all of you.
That you're going to turn around and tell the world. Yes, exactly.
And I said, all right, so you're working with these companies and you're doing some cool stuff. And I said, what about Maserati? What's coming out from Maserati?
Of course you did. Of course
because
you did now.
If this Quattroporte runs and is an amazing winter car, I will be vindicated and suddenly I'll be a Maserati fan. And or it'll break and I'll hate it.
Or you'll end up as a hypocrite because of the rage you've got against Maserati up to this point. Yeah.
I just might. I'm willing to embrace either at this point.
Yeah, for sure.
But he said, yeah, there's some cool carbon, full carbon stuff coming from Maserati. And then today, finding in car news, I found a Maserati prototype that has just been released that looks pretty wicked.
Oh,
and
no.
I'm thinking, I just might be vindicated on Maseratis. They might come out with something that just astounds the car world, and suddenly we all want Maseratis.
I don't think any of that's going to happen, but I do.
Or this thing will break.
I do think you've waded in about neck deep into the pool of Maserati. You're not doing the backstroke like the pool of Porsche
but
yet.
He convinced me. He's like, oh,
yeah. You're wading in.
There's some cool stuff coming from Maserati.
It's all
like,
bad.
Sweet, I actually just bought one for $10,900. Actually, you all bought one.
Yeah,
$10,900.
You did. You did, guys. And thank you for that. And I think at the same time, I'm
so,
sorry.
Yeah. Exciting times.
All right,
for
that's
Maserati.
Going on. The last one we're going to talk about is the Jeep booth, which had every flavor of Gladiator possible. And
yeah.
I asked this question.
Yeah,
and I know there's the elephant engine that they're selling, and people have put that in the Gladiator. And I know people are, like, Hennessy's putting in the big engines, but
they made it fit.
Yeah, but I do want to ask this question honestly. I'm really surprised that the Gladiator, to this point, has not been released with anything but the Pentastar V6.
I see your point.
I know that's got some power, but that Gladiator is enormous. enormous, and I think it cries out to have from the factory even the bottom level Hemi engine offered, and it doesn't, and that shocks me. Because the Gladiator is simply huge. And we saw one, I'm not kidding
it's
you.
It's long and
we
huge.
We saw one two-door Wrangler. The rest of the entire booth was Gladiators or four-door Wranglers. And the Gladiator makes the four-door Wrangler look like the old two-door Wrangler. So when you see a two-door Wrangler, it's like a model car.
What's that small sport?
Seriously.
Oh, that's the original Wrangler.
And it's not small, but it looks like somebody's model of a Jeep.
It does. It's pretty astounding.
It's hysterical. And that's the only one I'd want anyway. My wife, that's the only one she would want to be the two-door Wrangler, which makes me laugh because now apparently it's like the Wrangler done by Mini.
There's more cars we could rant on. Yeah. We saw the Audi e-tron Sportback. It was Sportback everything. It was the Atlas Sportback. And then, of course, Audi released the RS Q8 and the RS6 Avant, which look amazing.
Yeah.
Everything that Audi is doing is just, they're killing it. The door handles in the new S8, the new A8, essentially just... Oh, they're so
Yeah, they're
well
doing lots
done.
Of hidden features and stuff. It's very clean. It's super clean. Their stuff looks very nice. The RS6 is, where none of us are surprised. It's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous.
It's like, don't you want me?
One.
And the answer is, yes, I do. So, yeah, that's awesome. We should try to do, there's not a lot of questions that aren't about the broken Phaeton, because, yes, the Phaeton's broken. We should do a couple other questions.
Is that going to be a recurring theme for the next 8, 10, 12 months?
I really hope not. And the other thing about it is, everything about it worked 2 days ago. about it works.
Here's the thing. There is no gloating over here on this side.
Yeah.
There's none.
I
because
know.
As soon as I do, something's going to go
we'll
on
see.
The Mazda.
And you guys have asked, and we are going to keep a running tally so we can understand exactly what's been spent on these cars at every step. We're going to keep a running tally, and we will be sharing that in videos.
For sure.
We can talk about what cost what. Because, you know, I am going to back up and defend this whole ridiculous idea for one second, and that is this. We've talked about it before. Any car
There's
you buy.
There's a little remorse going on for the things we might have to spend money on.
No. Any car you buy. Look, I bought a $5,000 car. Forget that it's a luxury car for a second. I bought a $5,000 car.
Sure.
Any car you buy, especially a high mile, cheap car, is going to need things.
Yeah.
Stuff is going to wear out. Now, hopefully, it's not a $1,500 a corner air suspension, but I want to separate out the fact that having to put money into a cheap car doesn't mean it's unreliable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then if it has to be a constant thing and it's wildly expensive, yes, then you can put an unreliable badge on it. But as of this minute, it's just, okay, my $5,000 car, I just got it, I'm putting stuff into it, it broke, I'm going to need to put some more money in. I've done it to everything I've owned.
Sure, it's inevitable.
So any car you buy, especially a used car that is a cheap used car, will need stuff. That doesn't instantly mean it's reliable. You just hope that once you get over the initial hump of that problem, it's reliable for you for a bit and doesn't need stuff. That's the thing we don't know. We don't know if this Phaeton problem and your CEL on
oh,
the...
Oh, man. It's so stressful. Point,
is that
it's
the
so
beginning
stressful.
Of madness, or is that just like, okay, let's get everything settled out, let's fix some stuff?
Yeah, right.
I don't know.
Right.
We'll find out. So, Dammit Patton's asking if my son has picked a favorite yet between the QP5 and the Phaeton.
Oh, yeah.
And to my surprise, so far, he really prefers the Phaeton.
And which is totally cool, and he should. It's
I think
cool
it
car.
Has to do with the fact that it's so different than everything else we have. It's monstrous.
It has more buttons.
And there are so many buttons to push.
That's why.
So he is all about the Phaeton, and he's probably very bummed to find out that it is still broken.
Yeah.
But we will get back to it.
All right. What other questions are you finding
Well,
there?
I have this one that I wanted to cover from Areopolis. I'm very curious what your take is here. And then, you know what? We're at about an hour. We probably should wrap it up. Areopolis said he just moved north of Denver.
Okay.
Everyone he meets, it's a tire question, it's wintertime. Everyone he meets, he seems, feels like they have either all season, well, they have two sets of tires, but the sets are all seasons and winter.
Okay.
So he's asking, do I need to buy three summers, all seasons, and winters?
Oh, to get to extract the maximum performance.
And to be honest with you, look, we're living in Park City. I have two sets for cars that do double duty. I have a summer, like the FRS is the best example that I had. I had Michelin Pilot Super Sports.
Yeah.
Those are my full summer performance tires, and I had Bridgestone Blizzax as full winter tires. I did not have an all-season tire because I wanted maximum performance in either kinds of weather. Yes, that means there's a scenario there where there are some days slash, you know, better part of a month where you're not on the ideal tire for parts of the day, but you just suffer through. The thing is, the performance summer rubber, it does really well, typically even in wet weather.
It does.
It's
especially
a temperature
those tires
question.
Are quite good.
It's a temperature question.
It is.
And once
yeah.
you get below temperature, truthfully, below about 50 degrees, the all seasons should be winters anyway.
if I were to have winter tires for the Cayman, I would just keep two sets. So it would be the PS4s and winter tires for the Cayman. But it all depends on the car, because do you really want to put really large, expensive summer tires on a SUV? I mean, that's the only question.
Our Cayenne has performance all seasons for the summer and winters.
Right. That's my point, is that, you know, do you want, you know, the really high-end, super expensive performance tires that SUV is going to chew up? Or do you want, all right, performance all seasons, which are going to be great, and then winters? That way you avoid actually doing three sets. But it all depends on the car. So if it's, you know, an Alfa Romeo Giulia, something like that, you could probably get away with high performance all seasons and then definitely do winters.
See, but I on the Alfa, I would put the full summers and full winters.
Okay,
fair enough. I take your point, because
I mean, you could, if
we put full performance summer rubber on my wife's Cayenne and we were through them in 7,000 miles, and then I looked at the way she was driving the car and I went, I'm not doing that again. So I got performance all season.
It comes down to how much money you didn't want to spend.
Really, really well for the kind of driving she does. And it makes the car able to bridge that kind of shoulder season.
Maybe the Giulia is a bad example. You probably would want the performance on that car.
But your point, your point is valid on how are you driving the car is a factor here as well. So, Areopolis, I hope that helps. The rest of the questions, I know there's a myriad of them related to fate and fails. We will get back to that. Guys, thanks for listening. If you have your car debate, we're back to Car Debate's next podcast, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com is the email address. You can reach us there. Of course, everydaydriver.com is the straight up website. You can find all the films, all the TV shows. Hey, by the way, if you've watched the show on Amazon, specifically season 5 on Amazon, please rate it on Amazon. That helps us. You guys are rating and reviewing this podcast, which is helping other people find it and keeping the ratings up and keeping people finding it.
That's a big deal, is rating and reviewing. Yeah.
We really appreciate it. Thank you guys, as always, for listening.
Guys, we're looking forward to continually updating you. Like I said, the videos are coming.
Yeah.
They are, but we want them to be solid and good because, you know, we also have to introduce ourselves to everybody on the forums that don't know we own these cars yet.
Yeah, that's coming too.
It's coming. Cheers, everyone.